Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Amid rising tensions in Bolivia, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for calm and maximum restraint. The UN chief's appeal followed the sentencing of opposition leader and La Paz governor Luis Fernando Camacho to 4 months of pretrial detention. His sentence was delivered after his arrest in connection with social unrest in 2019 that saw former President Evo Morales flee the country. In a statement, a spokesperson for the UN Secretary General said that he was concerned about the situation and had stressed the importance of the rule of law and due process and transparency in legal proceedings. Days after the latest sea rescue of Rohingya refugees by Indonesian fishing crews, UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk appealed on Friday for greater regional support to protect them. More than 200 Rohingya who fled military persecution in Myanmar in 2017 have died trying to cross the Andaman Sea from Bangladesh this year, Mr. Türk said. He added that the boats used to make these crossings are unsafe and overcrowded, and passengers are left adrift for days without help. More than 2,400 Rohingya have attempted the sea journey in 2022, and with no sign of the crisis ending, the UN Rights Chief urged more countries to assist in keeping them safe. Specifically, Mr. Türk urged them to coordinate proactive search and rescue operations, to disembark Rohingya refugees on their territories, and ensure their protection. The High Commissioner for Human Rights also called on countries in the region and globally to help Bangladesh support the over 1 million Rohingya refugees who've sought protection there since 2017. An urgent solution must be found to enable the voluntary return of all Rohingya with full respect of their dignity and human rights as full and equal citizens of Myanmar, Mr. Türk said. To Ethiopia, where UN agencies and partners are working with the authorities on a nationwide measles vaccination campaign that's aiming to reach more than 15 million children. Announcing the news on Friday, the World Health Organization, WHO, said that it has already begun contacting communities to ensure that the operation runs smoothly. Measles, which is preventable, remains a major health problem in Ethiopia, with several outbreaks reported in different parts of the country, the UN Health Agency said. Vaccinations are planned for a total of 15.5 million youngsters aged 9 to 59 months across the nation, including in hard-to-reach places affected by drought and conflict. In addition, and together with the UN Children's Fund UNICEF and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, the WHO is supporting a range of other life-saving services. These include COVID-19 jabs and catch-up immunizations for under-vaccinated children, screening for acute malnutrition, vitamin A drops, and deworming against intestinal parasites. Medical workers also plan to help women with obstetric fistula following childbirth and identifying clubfoot in children. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel sworn in the most far-right government in 74-year history, led by Benjamin Netanyahu, who begins an unprecedented sixth term as prime minister. The new government includes the ultra-nationalist and ultra-orthodox parties that are calling openly for the annexation of the West Bank. A document listing the new government's policies includes a pledge to build settlements in occupied Palestinian lands. It reads, quote, "The Jewish people has an exclusive and inalienable right to all parts of the land of Israel," unquote. In the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority said Israel's new government poses an existential threat to the Palestinian people. This is Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shdeya.
"We passed through many extremist governments, but this government is the most extremist. This government is the most threatening. This government is the most insolent. And I know for a fact that the international community will not deal with many members of this government. Therefore, to us, we are against all the governments that practice killing and oppression on our people."
President Biden's congratulated Benjamin Netanyahu on his return to power, saying saying he looks forward to working with Israel's new government. In a statement released Thursday, Biden referred to Netanyahu as his friend for decades, adding, quote, the United States will continue to support the two-state solution and to oppose policies that endanger its viability or contradict our mutual interests and values, unquote. Biden's statement did not mention Israel's illegal settlements and ignored concerns over the new government's far-right, ultra-religious, and ultra-nationalist members. The United Nations has halted some of its humanitarian aid operations in Afghanistan after the Taliban imposed a ban on female workers at non-governmental organizations. The UN's humanitarian aid coordinator in Afghanistan, Ramiz Alakbarov, said Thursday the ban has immediate life-threatening consequences for all Afghans.
The humanitarian needs of the people are absolutely enormous, and it's important that we continue to stay and deliver. As we do so, it's equally important that the rights of women and girls, of which we are so much talking these days, are absolutely preserved and protected.
Ukraine's military says it shot down a swarm of 16 drones launched by Russia overnight against targets in Kyiv. The latest attack on Ukraine's capital came after Russia launched one of its heaviest waves of missile strikes of the 10-month-old war. This is a 79-year-old Kyiv resident who narrowly escaped injury after his home was destroyed Thursday.
I have no words for what to call it. As they say, war is war, and things happen. But this is not war. It's a crime against humanity.
In Moscow, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said military leaders are looking at attacking railway lines, bridges, and tunnels across Ukraine in an effort to cut off the flow of weapons and ammunition sent by Ukraine's allies. This comes as Belarus summoned the Ukrainian ambassador on Thursday and demanded Kyiv carry out a full investigation after a Ukrainian air defense missile crashed in a field in Belarus. Belarus is a staunch ally of Russia and has allowed its territory to be used as a staging ground for Russian attacks on Ukraine. The incident has heightened fears that Belarus could be drawn into a direct conflict with Ukraine. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he expects Chinese President Xi Jinping to visit Moscow in the spring during a video conference today between the two heads of state. In Italy, the far-right government of Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is cracking down on charity vessels that rescue asylum seekers at sea. Among other things, a new decree seeks to prevent the ships from carrying out multiple unplanned rescues during a single mission. Charities violating the new rules could be fined and their ships impounded. Over 100,000 asylum seekers have disembarked in Italy over the past year, according to government data. Brazil's president-elect, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, finalized his cabinet appointments Thursday ahead of his January 1st inauguration. Amazon rainforest defender, Goldman Prize winner Marina Silva was chosen as Brazil's environmental minister. She held the post in Lula's previous two terms in office, during which Amazon deforestation slowed significantly. Indigenous land and water defender, Sonia Guajajara, was named Brazil's first ever minister for indigenous peoples. Lula also nominated black activist, journalist, and educator Aniele Franco as Brazil's new minister of racial equality. She's the sister of Marielle Franco, who was a human rights and racial justice activist, member of Rio de Janeiro City Council before she was assassinated in 2018. Ahead of Lula's swearing-in Sunday, the Brazilian Supreme Court temporarily banned registered gun owners from carrying their firearms in the capital, Brasilia, until after the inauguration ceremony. The move comes amidst rising concerns of violence from the far right and supporters of defeated President Jair Bolsonaro. Brazilian police on Thursday arrested at least four people and carried out nationwide raids as they investigated an alleged coup attempt led by backers of Bolsonaro who've refused to accept Lula's victory. Bolsonaro has yet to concede. Brazil has begun 3 days of mourning over the death of the Brazilian soccer legend Pelé, known as the King of Football. Pelé died Thursday in Sao Paulo due to complications from colon cancer and COVID-19. He was 82 years old. Born Edson Arantes do Nascimento Pele is the only soccer player to have won three World Cup tournaments. The first in 1958, when Pele rose to international fame at the age of 17, Brazil declared him a national treasure. Pele also won 10 league titles with his club Santos and is credited with popularizing soccer in the United States when he played for the New York Cosmos in the 70s. Pele was born in the Brazilian state of Minas Gerais in 1940. Brazil's incoming president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, said on Twitter, quote, "Few Brazilians took the name of our country as far as he did." We'll have more on Pele's life and legacy after headlines. South Korea has carried out military drills after it failed to intercept North Korean drones that crossed into its airspace Monday. This is South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol.
The intrusion of North Korean drones in our airspace is an intolerable act. Many people are worried and concerned. We should let North Korea learn that provocations are always met by harsh consequences.
South Korea will require travelers arriving from China to submit a negative COVID-19 test amidst China's worsening surge. This comes after India, Italy, Taiwan, and the United States also imposed new testing requirements on travelers from China. But health authorities say such measures do little to stop the spread of COVID, and critics say the travel restrictions are being used as a diplomatic weapon and could further fuel anti-Asian hate. And here in New York, the first legal recreational cannabis dispensary opened its doors to the public Thursday at 4:20 p.m. The Housing Works Cannabis Company dispensary in Manhattan is run by a nonprofit serving people living with HIV/AIDS, as well as unhoused and formerly incarcerated people. Chris Alexander, the executive director of New York State's newly formed Office of Cannabis Management, was the dispensary's first ever customer.
One of the key priorities was always, you know, addressing the criminal consequences that exist that stem from marijuana prohibition and its disproportionate enforcement, but also access, right? And access to a plant that is medicine for so many, particularly in the HIV and AIDS community as well.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the House Committee on the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol heard more than 1,000 witness interviews and held multiple public hearings, resulting in criminal referrals to the Justice Department for Donald Trump, lawyer John Eastman, and others involved in violent efforts to override the results of Trump's election loss. The committee released transcripts showing some 24 witnesses invoking their right against self-incrimination. Eastman, key advisor to Trump on how to overturn the election, cited his Fifth Amendment right 155 times. At one point, Democratic House member Jamie Raskin asked GOP operative Roger Stone if he believed coups are allowed in our constitutional system, to which Stone said, quote, "I most definitely decline to respond to your question," close quote. But the headwinds that the committee's recommendations face are not just from the MAGA hatters, but also some of the very smart people who will tell us that our desire for justice is really just partisan, or worse, bloodlust. And what we really ought to do, what intelligent people would do, is, well, nothing. Let wiser minds prevail. We're having none of that. We spoke with Lisa Gilbert. She's Executive Vice President of Public Citizen and co-founder of the Forged for Purpose, Not Above the Law Coalition. We talked about what the hearings found and why it can't end there. That's coming up this week on Counterspin, but first a look back at some recent press. In recent weeks, Elon Musk has, this is not an exhaustive list, silenced Twitter accounts of several anti-fascist organizers and journalists, after right-wing operatives appealed directly to Musk to ban them and reopened far-right accounts, including that of the publisher of the Nazi Daily Stormer. He's eliminated Twitter's Trust and Safety Council, the advisory group of some 100 independent civil and human rights groups that the company formed to address hate speech. He's enforced an anti-union stance. When janitors at Twitter's San Francisco headquarters went on strike, a top Musk lieutenant allegedly told a fired member of the cleaning staff that his job would be done by robots. Musk has threatened to sue Twitter employees who leak information about the company, never mind that he has released confidential emails and memos in an effort to discredit the company's former management. He supported Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in his run for president and flatly stated his support for Republicans in the most recent congressional races. Asked why he had a strained relationship with his trans daughter, Musk's answer was, quote, communism, close quote. For the New York Times, this means Musk's political leanings are, quote, tricky to pin down, close quote. As Ari Paul writes for Fair.org, the Times' December 10th article by Jeremy Peters acknowledged that Musk promotes anti-left theories and rails against wokeness, but says, quote, his enthusiasm for Republicans has been more muted, close quote. His support for DeSantis, for example, was not especially resounding because Musk merely replied yes when someone on Twitter asked him. Well, it was bad luck for the Times' effort to demand that we find nuance in the fact that the day after that piece appeared, Musk tweeted, quote, my pronouns are prosecute Fauci, close quote, scoring a nuance-free twofer by winking to COVID conspiracy theorists and ridiculing trans rights. Paul notes that the Times might be reluctant to portray Musk's anti-union position as a right-wing trait, given that News Guild of New York members at the Times recently staged a one-day walkout, highlighting the paper's failure to reach a new collective bargaining agreement with the union. In an earlier piece on what the paper insists are the, quote, elusive politics of Elon Musk, close quote, the Times reported as a supposed contradiction the fact that Musk railed against federal subsidies, while at the same time his companies have benefited from billions of dollars in tax breaks and other incentives from federal, state, and local governments. If the paper listened seriously to economic progressives, they might acknowledge that gobbling up corporate subsidies while opposing welfare for the masses is not complex or confusing. It's just garden variety hypocrisy. The media conversation around interest rate hikes and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell suggests nothing so much as a cult in which profit is the profit and the sacrifice is working people. So writes Luca Goldmansour for Fair.org about corporate media coverage of inflation, which holds maximal profits and scarcity for ordinary people as often unspoken premises. Latest Fed rate hike, more pain coming, was a recent USA Today headline, leading some to ask, well, pain for whom? And we're anti-pain, right? The online version linked to a story with working people rightly bemoaning the increases in their cost of living. But as more pain coming makes clear, USA Today doesn't provide any option for people like those in that article except the Rube Goldberg conveyor belt Powell and the Federal Reserve have constructed. The paper tells readers, quote, consumers should expect their costs to head even higher and job losses to mount as economic growth slows, close quote. But wait for it, the Fed's moves will, quote, ripple through the economy and ultimately hit businesses and consumers and slow demand and inflation, close quote. The Fed's actions are, of course, deserving of coverage, but for outlets to pay lip service to the needs of ordinary Americans, as if that's what's driving the Fed's decision to burden them further, is just obscuring the class war being waged. It's a kind of bait and switch that works to convince people that the scarcity they feel is an inevitable consequence of natural forces and not a political decision that need not be. And finally, the Washington Post had a headline December 16th, "Can politics kill you? Research says the answer increasingly is yes." The lead of the article tells readers about two studies that reveal what the paper calls an uncomfortable truth. Quote, "The toxicity of partisan politics is fueling an overall increase in mortality rates for working-age Americans," close quote. But as Julie Holler notes, when you read further into the article, you find that politics isn't the problem here. One of the studies the Post reports found that, quote, "people living in more conservative parts of the United States disproportionately bore the burden of illness and death linked to COVID-19, close quote. The other study found that, quote, "the more conservative a state's policies, the shorter the lives of working-age people," close quote. So the problem isn't so much politics as it is conservatism. Indeed, the article notes that one of the reports found that if all states implemented liberal policies on the environment, guns, tobacco, and other health-related policies, 170,000 lives would be saved a year. Still, the analysis in the piece centers around the idea that the problem is not right-wing ideology, but a lack of bipartisanship that's to blame, as, quote, "the division in American politics has grown increasingly caustic and polarized," close quote. Do you know what would actually benefit politics in the United States? A media system that was willing to point out who was causing demonstrable problems, rather than pretending that both sides are always to blame. Reporting like that might actually save lives. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. "The end of the Trump era will be unsatisfying," declared New York Times columnist Ross Douthat this week. "There will be no perp walk where Trump exits the White House in handcuffs." That's a little odd, given Trump's not in the White House, but the point is to reduce calls for accountability for obvious crimes to emotional, unreasonable cries for vengeance. It's the same way the Times told us we were entitled to wonder whether any of the highly paid executives who helped kindle the 2008 financial disaster will ever see jail time. But, the paper told us, the harder question is whether anybody should. So here we are again with Douthat's advice that while the realities of Trump and Trumpians' concerted, premeditated efforts to overturn democracy are, quote, "yielding some righteous anger," close quote, the intelligent takeaway is that, quote, "an unsatisfying absence of repudiation or vindication is a normal feature of democratic life," close quote. The editorial board of the Wall Street Journal concurs that while the January 6th inquiry has done useful work gathering documents and putting witnesses under oath, the wiser course was to let the established facts speak for themselves. After all, the journal says, quote, "Trump's ultimate goal wasn't to obstruct the congressional session on January 6th. He wanted it to go his way. This was nonsense and it had no chance of success, but was it a crime to lobby Mr. Pence to try?" Close quote. So the upshot, lest you miss it, is that it's appropriate to feel anger and outrage about things, but directing it at the people who orchestrate and profit from it is childish and irrational. The sophisticated thing to do with our anger over fundamental assaults on our society's organizing principles is to diffuse it into droplets in the air that never actually land. So how do we resist this recipe for no change and turn information about what happened on January 6th specifically into accountability? Lisa Gilbert is Executive Vice President of Public Citizen and co-founder of the meaningfully named Not Above the Law Coalition. Welcome back to Counterspin, Lisa Gilbert.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's start concretely. Folks will have heard a swirl of stuff, but what are the charges against Donald Trump that come out of this congressional committee? And is there, respectfully, any sense that these charges are inflated or partisan or anything other than legal charges?
Well, thanks for that. I think that the Herculean efforts of the January 6th Select Committee have really borne fruit. They laid them out in a clear, meaningful, and compelling way this Monday. We're still waiting for their final report to drop today, but the charges against Donald Trump were clear and followed in a clear through line from the evidence that the committee found in a very bipartisan way. You know, most of their witnesses were high-level Republicans who worked closely with the president. So the four charges were obstruction of an official proceeding, the proceeding being the January 6th meeting of Congress itself, where they had intended to certify the presidential results. Conspiracy to defraud the United States. You know, this happened in multiple ways, including the president's lies about the 2020 election, lies about the vice president's role in certification and how it works, among many other lies. Conspiracy to knowingly make a false statement. So this was the participation in the plot to submit the fake slates of electors. And then finally, assisting, aiding, or comforting, that's an interesting word, but comforting an insurrection. So, you know, helping to incite the attack, but then also assisting others who did so as well. So, you know, the reason for this charge is, you know, all the actions he took as the insurrection began to unfold, or actually the actions he did not take. You know, he did not, you know, call in additional assistance to the Capitol Police who were under siege. He did not call the Department of Defense. Instead, he just sat and watched it all unfold on TV. So those are the four charges, I think, you know, very clearly outlined by the committee and very robustly supported by their work.
Well, let me ask you, if I could, just another angle on it. What do you see as the harms of not bringing charges here? I think folks are eager to reduce it to partisan back and forth, but it's so much deeper. And what happens if we just say, oh, you know, folks who like Trump, folks who didn't like him think something bad happened on January 6th, you know, yep. What happens if we don't go forward?
I think not going forward is a recipe for disaster for democracy, not to be overblown. I think if we don't hold the bad actors accountable for what was, you know, arguably the most dramatic and dangerous day in recent history of our nation, then what can we hold people accountable for? And though it is true that, you know, referrals to other bodies, referrals to the DOJ or referrals to the House Ethics Committee are not the same as actually prosecuting or moving forward charges, the committee doing this sends such a clear signal and backup, if you will, to the DOJ, as the special counsel there is working feverishly, as we know, to actually bring charges that will stick. And so having this really clear evidential record is helpful.
Well, let's just draw about that in terms of the reality. So what came out of the committee is evidence, is information. And now we're at a place where that information can be used or not used. What is the state of play here?
That's right. So, you know, the committee is, as advertised, an investigative body. They have spent almost a year investigating, calling witnesses, looking at thousands of documents. I mean, it has been a truly robust, impressive, bipartisan effort, which led to the findings in their report, the recommendations that we'll soon see about how to improve democracy, and then these referrals to, you know, our bodies of justice that can take it further. Certainly that work, you know, is essential for laying the groundwork and outside understanding of regular people,
right,
such that, you know, as the special counsel moves forward, we all already understand why and what and how important it is.
Well, when you say take it further, I guess what I want to get at is I think a lot for the public, there's an important distinction to be made about Donald Trump and then what also enablers did. And the idea of even if Trump, you know, in some fanciful other planet goes to jail, will that still prevent another thing like this from happening? So there's an interest in sort of separating out the criminal charges against an individual and how do we also as a society address the problems that were obviously evidenced on that day.
That's right. No, that is definitely right. There is more than one solution needed to the problem of an insurrection. This is a piece of it, what we're talking about now, the individual who is most culpable being held accountable, and the fact that that person was the president of the United States makes it more important, not less, that we do, in fact, hold him accountable.
Right.
That's the piece the DOJ is pursuing. That's the piece that is being pursued in Georgia prosecution. And, you know, we want to see it borne out. We want charges and we want them to stick. However, separately, we also need to reform our democracy such that no other president can ever be this bankrupt morally and can't do anything like this again. And so there are a lot of threads to that. One piece, actually, we had a victory this week. I don't know if people are paying attention to this, but the Electoral Count Act reforms, which many of us in D.C. have been lobbying for months now, passed or were included as a part of the year-end budget deal. So we'll soon pass. So this is critical because, you know, it could prevent the idea of the vice president simply in his posture as chair of the Senate, as he is overseeing an electoral count, could change what he's perceiving. So, you know, that sort of unclear language in the original Electoral Count Act is what Trump relied on and misled his followers around, and certainly part of what sparked the insurrection. You know, assuming the Electoral Count Reform Act passes, that will no longer be an option. We need that, and we need other reforms to continue to protect democracy to move forward as well.
Well, let me ask you about those, because I feel like we're all getting kind of a civics lesson about what laws are meaningful, what laws it turns out they don't mean anything if you don't, push on them. And, you know, we're all learning a lot here. And I think a lot of folks are sort of thinking that their idea about what's right and what's wrong is somehow reflected in the law. And we know that that's an imperfect relationship. And so there are other things that we could make more sturdy. There are other things that we could back up in order to, setting Donald Trump aside, in order to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. What are some of those also?
Well, certainly a lot of the reforms that we're talking about are contained in an omnibus legislative package called the Protecting Our Democracy Act, which we are hopeful could garner some bipartisan support, as did the Electoral Count Act reforms I was just talking about. So what it would do is shore up a lot of the loopholes that the Trump administration showed us exist. You know, as you say, you know, one of the main things we learned from his administration is that many things that we always thought were law were actually just norms.
Right.
Were actually just things that presidents have always done, but they're actually not required to do. So take his tax returns as a clear example of that. You know, all presidents have always released them, but they were not apparently yet officially required to do so. So those kinds of things. So, you know, some of the reforms carried within that legislation are things like improving our whistleblower laws so that it is easier for those within government who are seeing things that might be coming from an unhinged president. You know, those can be more easily shared and those people are protected. Things to shore up our inspectors general so that, you know, if pressure is being applied, you know, to agencies or across the country, they'll be able to catch it and they'll be protected and won't have to fear being fired without cause. You know, those are just a couple things, but I think there are, you know, numerous places where the fact that laws are not as clear as we once thought he was able to take advantage of that and abuse our ethical assumptions.
Absolutely. And, you know, okay, we can all learn, right? Let's all learn together. I'm a media critic, and so I fault media to some extent with this framing of Democrats versus Republicans, you know, that encourages people to get to a place of, oh, you're mad at Donald Trump, you don't like his ideas, and that's why you want him to go to jail. And I just think that's so corrosive. It's like, well, if it was your guy who was inciting insurrection, you'd be for it, right? You know, like, and I guess I'm hoping for more than elite media are giving us right now in terms of, yeah, I understand they need to have voices, you know, from lots of different perspectives. But there is something very fundamental that I feel that journalists could be doing in terms of holding up the importance of democratic principles. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder what you would like to see from journalists right now.
I think that's a fair critique. I think, you know, journalists have a responsibility to report the threats as they see them, and they're legion right now. One thing that may help them cover more and discuss this more is that the president, President Biden, has been leaning in quite a bit on these themes, you know, before the election, spending valuable, you know, last speechifying moments talking about the threats of MAGA Republicans to democracy and the problems of hate speech and the issues of the insurrection and the idea that election deniers could perhaps win. Luckily, many of them did not, but, you know, but that was a real threat. And he really spoke strongly about the problems with that. And so I think, you know, hopefully that kind of engagement on the part of the White House in turn makes it easier for journalists to spend more airtime, for editors to want to include stories about how we can improve democracy from here. But, you know, agree, I think it needs as much attention as it can get. And I think the American people feel that too.
Well, let me ask you, if charges were brought, if the January 6th commission evolved into indictments, would that mean the end of the Not Above the Law coalition? What is your purpose there?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, every policy group's idea is to be in place until you put yourself out of business because you've won. So I am not sure. But, you know, certainly we have found a role around ethics scandals in many a moment. So I wouldn't want to believe that, you know, should we send Trump to jail, that then problem is entirely solved. So I imagine we still have things to do. But it's a great question.
Part of what's happening going forward is that, you know, January 6th, 2023 is coming up right on us, and I know that you have work planned around that. What's going on?
Well, we are riding the wave coming out of the Select Committee's final business meeting and report to memorialize what they've done, to celebrate it, and to talk about the need for democracy reform going forward. We're doing this by holding events all around the country on the second anniversary of the insurrection. Although anniversary is maybe too celebratory a word.
Right.
We will be memorializing it and discussing what it means for democracy going forward. These events can be found at ourfreedomsourvote.org. And hopefully everyone who's listening can find one near them. And then if you're in the D.C. area, the flagship event will be in front of the Capitol at noon. So I encourage everyone to come.
Can I just ask you, what is the purpose? What's the intent of these events?
Both to simply memorialize and remember the horror that was the insurrection, but also to pivot forward and to talk about, you know, what it means to continue to fight for democracy, to push for voting rights reforms and campaign finance reforms and rule of law reforms, and to use the great work of the committee to sort of catapult us into the next phase of that fight.
All right, then. We've been speaking with Lisa Gilbert, co-founder of the Not Above the Law Coalition and executive vice president of Public Citizen. Their work's online at citizen.org. Lisa Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the media watch group FAIR, based in New York. If you missed part of today's shows or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on our website, FAIR.org. The website is also the place to learn about our newsletter Extra and to show support for Counterspin if you are able and so inclined. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin. Thank you.
Coming up at the top of the hour, John Grant live. So we've been gone a while, 2 weeks. Two Tuesdays we've been gone. Not good. I'm glad the holidays are over. I'm so glad the holidays are over. Coming up to the top of the hour, John Grant, and in the meantime, classic crime jazz.
Thank you.
Django Reinhardt and Stefan Stefanelli. Reinhardt is on the acoustic guitar, and Stefanelli played the violin. For that was a Henry Mancini, a public domain copy I snagged off of the Internet Archive. Henry Mancini's Not From Dixie, I think is the name of it. Coming up tomorrow on Radio Free Kansas.
The National Weather Service reported the Springfield Twister was the biggest storm to pass through central Illinois in a decade.
The West Texas wildfires have scorched so much land that it's like watching more than half of Rhode Island burn.
Biggest one I've ever seen.
I love to drive. You could say I'm an autoholic. My life began in a car, so Dad tells me. I discovered sex in the back seat too. I made my own kid there. I may die out on the road. When things get boring, I drive around looking for something else. And if it's no good here, I go there. Too hot? We'll just go north into the hills. Too cold? Off south, just like the birds. Sometimes, I don't even know why I'm going. I'm just out there on the road, rambling around. I've just got to get out there and drive, maybe for a day or two. See some country, some trees. I need to see nature. I've worked in vehicles and slept in them, even lived in one. Can't count all the hours I've just waited somewhere with the motor running, for red light, for traffic to move, for somebody to come out, for anything. Who even hears the motor running there under your thoughts? Vibration is good, moves the blood around. We don't even smell these engines unless something's broken. I've driven them all. Motorcycles, three-wheelers, minis, SUVs, compacts, pickups, a limousine, a truck, tractors, golf carts, you name it. If it's got a motor, that's good for me. And the power, the roar, the jolt of energy, the thrill of speed. I've got this armored steel that can run away, or run over, or damn near fly. My ride talks for me, tells you who I am. Without it, I'd just be a naked little animal out there in the rain and snow, like a snail without a shell. Likely I wouldn't kill for fuel, but my taxes pay for soldiers who will, by God. Gotta have gas. And if by accident I had to run over some kid, heaven forbid, or some old fart, I may lose my license for a little while, but I'll keep driving. We all need to get around. Okay, the weather is getting really weird. You never know what might happen. If this place floods or burns, I'll toss my stuff in here and go somewhere better. I'm not walking around like a loser. Notice anybody else getting off the road? Not likely. On my dying day, when I go, it'll be sitting upright behind the wheel. Check out Radio EcoShock, the planet's only all-environment radio station at www.ecoshock.org.
It is an outrageously large archive at ecoshock.org. Alex Smith has mustered some of the best scientists and interviews with the scientists I've ever seen. He'll be on tomorrow at noon here on Radio Free Kansas. And let's get ready here at the top of the hour for John Grant.
A lot of grass. Oh Lord, I've
popped a lot of pills. But I've never touched nothing that my spirit could kill. You know I've seen a lot of people walking around with tombstones in their eyes. But the butcher don't care. Ah, if you live or if you die. God damn, the pusher.
Thank you.
to Kevin McCarthy today. And
we've got John Grant, come on.
That's right.
I always loved that song. God damn the pusher man.
Kevin McCarthy is not pushing hard enough. They are cracking up here on. I'm looking at the live stream from C-SPAN.
Okay.
And we have a full frame AOC speaking with one of those crazy guys from. I think his name is Gosper. I can't remember. He's the one.
He's a bad news.
He's one of those that he was on the coup attempt on January 6th. He was one of the brave Republicans. It appears today that for the first time since 1855, the House of Representatives is going to be stuck with a second speaker vote. They just passed
one.
Go ahead. Take it over.
No, I just saw the count. The first vote was 203 votes for McCarthy and 212 votes for Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat.
Right.
You know, Hakeem Jeffries is beating the vote, for a Democrat, beating the vote for the Republican. And there's 19 who voted for others. I really like Hakeem Jeffries. I don't know if you followed him, but he's African American, but you wouldn't know it. But he's just so beyond race. You know, he's a smart, practical, a really good guy. So this is very interesting, as you suggest. Yeah. But I guess they're going to go on to another vote, and they'll go on to another vote. And I guess, was it 1855 that went on for months or something?
Well, I don't know how long it went. I just know that it was 1855 since they had a second round of votes for Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Now, that would be nice if it went on for months. Since it's already gridlocked anyhow, they're not going to get anything done.
Right, of course.
So,
right.
You know, spare me looking at Marjorie Taylor Greene putting up on the big screen on Congress pictures of Hunter Biden's penis. You know, I tend to think that's about all.
Please.
Well, that's the rumor. The rumor is that McCarthy offered her, NTG offered her a position on the Oversight Committee. And that would entail investigating the so-called Hunter Biden laptop. So she's a divorced woman. You know, maybe might get her rocks off there on the seat of the House of Representatives. You know,
I would not want to be Hunter Biden in 2023 somehow. It's not going to be a good year for him, I don't think.
He probably should go back to rehab. He should probably go back to rehab. Let's spend a couple months.
There. Yeah, he should. But, you know, one thing about Hunter Biden that should be obvious is he doesn't hold a candle to the corruption of the Trump family. You know, come on. You know, But need we say that? I don't know. I guess we don't have to say that.
Right? Well, I don't consider drug addiction a crime of corruption. It's a mental health problem, addiction. You know, but I suppose there could be
harm reduction programs.
Addiction.
You know, we didn't want the drug war. You know, I mean, the drug war was destructive, is a disaster. So yeah, let's get over that, and let Hunter Biden get some therapy and go on about our business here, you know?
Well, he's got all the, got the money, and his dad, they can afford it. Unlike millions of people in this country who have no good health care where they can afford to go into rehab, for any prolonged period of time. It seems like the only thing of rehab for drug addiction for the vast majority of working people is the 12-step program or AA or something like that. It's for narcotics.
Right. Well, 12 steps is basic stoicism. You know, it's just basic, almost they ripped off.
Yeah.
You know, some of the tenets of Greek stoicism, and, you know, they make a lot of sense. You know, in other words, you know, don't try to do things you don't have the power to do. You're going to make your life miserable, and you'll be drinking your life away, you know. Just, you know, be reasonable. Don't you know, overstep your capacities.
Yeah, and, you know, there's no explanation given, really, among anybody in power for why people, especially working people and people without jobs or health insurance, why do they want to escape? Or they get horrible food and become obese. I mean, or they go down to the local casino and gamble their paychecks away. Or, I mean why do people want to escape? Why do people want to escape in America? Mentally, especially, it's easiest.
Well, I think that is a very, very good question. And, you know, again, if you set your bar too high, you're always going to be unsatisfied and frustrated and you know, you're going to be unhappy. And you know, we need a dose of realism in culture. You know, we need to accept that we're, you know, we put our pants on just like anybody else and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're not as exceptional as we may think we are, you know. And this all leads to neuroses, you know, neuroses all over the place. And anyway, that's my two cents.
Well, this ceremony today, I guess it's no longer a ceremony now. It's a historical pushback here among...
It's a grueling grind now, I think.
I wonder, I mean, they're just the live feed from C-SPAN is basically just showing, you know, Chuck Lean, and I, you know, I was sort of shocked to see AOC sitting right by Gophers, I don't know his damn name. He's from Texas.
Oh, Gohmert? You mean Gohmert? Gohmert?
Yeah, the guy's got that. Some sort of, his family hates him. I can't remember.
Oh, that's not Gohmert. That's the other guy. That's Gosher or something. I forget his name. But yeah, he is kind of the worst of the worst. Every brother, every sibling he has is disowned him completely. You know?
Right.
Don't you think we're getting to a place, and this whole cartoon comedy with McCarthy can't get elected, don't you think, you know, the most lunatic of the far right elements are, you know, screeching and making an awful lot of noise right now, you know, especially Marjorie Greene or whatever her name is. But don't you think that's the last gasp of desperation of people that, you know, if you look at the way things are going, I think they're going to burn out, don't you? I mean, I wonder if they will burn out because, you know, if McCarthy really stumbles around and, you know, you don't even have to be legally, you don't have to be a member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker of the House of Representatives. You know, you or I could apparently be voted to be Speaker of the House. Now, what that means is, in this case, it means that, you know, the Democrat got, you know, 9 more votes than the Republican guy that was supposed to get it. Yeah. So something is amiss here, you know, that these, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greens are holding on with all this supposed authority and power that they have. Well, it may just be a figment, and it may just, you know, fizzle out with, you know, decisions made in reality here that, you know, they're not so imposing and as they may think they are in this crazy moment, you know. I don't know. We'll wait and see. But the authoritarians, I think, the right-wing authoritarians in the world right now, you know, they're not advancing. Look at the Ukrainian war today. It's New York Times, top story. Ukrainian strike exposes mistakes. I mean, this is stories happened before, but apparently the Russians were stupid enough. It seems stupid enough after the fact that they had all their troops housed in a building that had an arms, you know, an ammunition depot in the basement or something. And so somehow the Ukrainians figured all this out and blew the damn building up and killed up to 400 Russians in one take. And this just happened the 1st of January. And apparently,
well,
the pro war.
I'm not going to let you get away with that, okay?
What did you get away with? What? Tell me what I got away with.
Well, the Russians dispute that. They say it was 63, maybe 65 out of the numbers from Russia. So, I mean, you're looking at propaganda.
Well, it says here, it says here 63, but in another one it says a military official said it appeared that about 400 Russian troops had been killed, though they did not explicitly say that Kyiv was under the enemy. So, yeah, it's an argument between the sides. You know, the Russians are diminishing it. They're saying only 63. Well, you know, that's a fair amount of people. So anyway, it's a stain on them anyway, you know, as they've had a number of them, like the sinking of their battleship and a couple other things, you know.
Well, if I remember right, I think this is in Donetsk, right, where this
that area.
Bombing
right.
Okay, well, you know, those people voted to not be part of Ukraine, whether you like it, you know, whether the New York Times believes that or not. But I'm just trying to
right.
be the devil's
well,
advocate.
Well, no, I didn't know we were getting into this bad New York Times thing. Okay.
I didn't
so,
say that.
I don't – the New York Times suggests there is a argument between the polarized sides in the war, obviously, between how many were killed. So we don't know that yet. Yeah.
Right. And did they point out that the Ukrainians are bombing a territory that voted not to be part of Ukraine?
Well, I mean, they don't respect the vote. Obviously, democracy is very, very low ebb these days, you know, here and there.
I don't know.
I mean, this is a war, you know, that tends to trump, war tends to trump democracy, and maybe there is a little bit of a pun in there, I don't know. But anyway, all foreign reporting is on the story. It looks like the important part of the story for me is that pro-war Russians are beginning to prompting outraged Russian war hawks to accuse their army of incompetence. And you know, at some point, that's the only way this war is, I think, going to end. Is you know, war makers, you know, in Russia. You know, Russian pro-war people are going to say this doesn't work, and we have to stop it, and we have to at least you know end it, or else it's not going to end. You know, and you know, my learning has been that exhaustion is the most powerful anti-war weapon. In other words, we're sick and tired of the killing, and we're sick and tired of our tripping over our own dicks in the case of the Russians, and you know that we got to end this. This is just not going well for anybody. I don't think we're there yet, but I call that the exhaustion factor. You know, everybody's tired of all the killing and the horror and no heat, it's cold, you know, and Russians are being accused of being incompetent, and there's a lot of evidence that it's true. You know, if they're supposed to be this great empire and they can't even knock off Ukraine, you know, at some point, this is all going to lead to, as I say, the exhaustion factor, and, you know, maybe something can be done. But it takes a long, long time, obviously. You know, wars are easy to start and very, very hard to stop. That's the mantra of Veterans for Peace, which I've been a part of for, what, 40 years now. And I think that is true.
Right. Well, I mean, they just brought in a Jeffries in, here in the floor of the House, and Jeffrey received a standing ovation from the Democrats, of course, and they called
they
him out.
Him.
And then McCarthy got one, a standing ovation. He's sitting by himself, notably. There's no, and also an interesting shot earlier. Jim Jordan is now taking the microphone.
I'm sure he's got his shirt sleeves rolled up and all that, right?
No, he's
taking a wrestling posture. You know?
He's in dress code. He's got his suit on. Notably, the guy from New York's 3rd District, Santos, the camera went to him.
I knew
what happened. The gay immigrant from Brazil,
right.
who claims he is a Jew, but he was raised Catholic. They caught so many lies.
Well, he said he was Jew-ish.
He's a Catholic, but he was Jew-ish. And gay, and the latest new paid correspondent, probably, I don't know what they get, $30,000 a show, Tulsi on the record homophobe, interviewing him on Fox News and got that out of him, and just one lie after another she was exposing to his face on Fox News. This weekend, and I thought that was amazing that Fox
was
hurting this guy, and the C-SPAN cameras focused in on Santos, that's his name, and he said not, like McCarthy has one chair vacant beside him, Santos has no chairs, they're all vacant around him, nobody's sitting near Santos, nobody,
He's not going to have friends in Congress. Well, you know, the Democrats, ironically, will be like, fine, keep him there. We'll flog him for 2 straight years. You know, if he runs again, we'll make hay out of that. So, you know, I mean, he's so, so condemnable and bad. And, you know, he's a terrible example for gay people. You know, because he's this soft, roly-poly, mama's boy kind of guy. And, you know, he's a total sociopath. He lies like a dog, you know. And, and he's so, you know, when his mannerisms, or he's so happy. He's the happy warrior, you know. And what's really going to get him is they're going to extradite the son of a bitch to Brazil. Because Brazil is pissed. Because he fled Brazil. When he was 20 years old in Brazil, living in Brazil, he stole somebody's mother's employer, I think it was. He stole his checkbook and went out and bought like $600 worth of clothes or something. I forget, you know, a fairly large amount. And then he was caught, and then he went on hiding, and they couldn't find him, and then he moved to the United States. And so the case went dormant because they couldn't find him. Well, suddenly he reappears, you know, and now they're ready to nail that son of a bitch. And, you know, they got the goods on him. He's even confessed virtually. And so, you know, he's going to be extradited, possibly, or he'll be tried in absentia. That's what apparently is going to happen. And if he's convicted in absentia, then it becomes a major, major story of Brazil trying to extradite a elected U.S. congressman to Brazil to face the music of justice. You know, this is all potential drama coming up, you know, and the Democrats are going to love every minute of it, you know, because ironically, with Hakeem Jeffries and, you know, Pelosi backing out so gracefully at the top, you know, and unlike Democrats, usually they aren't at each other. They aren't arguing. They're all together. It's like the Democrats are acting like Republicans in that sense, and the Republicans are chewing each other up like Democrats usually do. And, you know, you look at this Kevin McCarthy, you almost feel bad for him. Oh, he's so set on this power position. You give one goddamn what he's going to do with it. All he wants to do is have this mantle of power that somehow he's the man, you know. And it's so ridiculous and pathetic and dangerous, because if somebody's so obsessively, narcissistically obsessed with a seat of power, you know, they're not doing anything productive. They're not helping out. You know, they're just, you know, further throwing monkey wrenches into the system just so they can have their own little posture of power. I don't know. It's really, really disturbing, actually, you know, that this is all happening. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Biden, of course, is looking good. My buddy from Atlanta, a heavy-duty political watcher who works with campaigns, is now saying that, you know, Biden looks great in 2024. I mean, he's on, he's confident, he's probably stopped making jokes about his Alzheimer and all that, you know. Republicans are, I think, desperate. You know, and John Fetterman was sworn in today, and I think I don't think he stumbled over the swearing, you know. I think he's fine.
I mean, you know, 84, I mean, how old will be old Joe? 84?
Yeah, well, you know.
We'll see.
That's old. That's old, you know. I mean, that's... 9 years older than I am, you know, hey.
It's older than me, too. It sounds like nothing is going to be done to help people, like struggling with mental health issues, medical problems, an outrageous military budget that is fucking obliterating parts of Central Europe. Unchecked, you know. I mean, I guess they finally, after what, 6 months, these idiots in the Congress finally allocated some money to send inspectors over there to track the weapons we're just credit carding to the Ukrainians. I mean, we're finally, I guess somebody, I don't even know who, is supposed to keep track of the weapons going into the right hands in Ukraine.
Right.
I mean, there's so many grotesque things that are happening to the working people in this country. I mean, I don't know. This party that's going on here that I'm watching right now on the C-SPAN feed, it's more like a party. Why are their kids, why do all these representatives have their kids in the seat of the Congress? I mean, is it some kid day?
Well, it's supposed to be a proud moment when you're sworn in as, you know, but nowadays there's so much corruption and crap.
They didn't get anyone in. They're going to have to go to vote. First time in 150 years, they're going to have another vote. Is this some sort of con game that they're playing on people, that this is a big deal? I mean, they got their kids and their grandkids sitting on their laps and Yeah, that's wonderful. Here's Matt Gaetz, a guy who enabled a pedophile in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, Pensacola. Matt Gaetz is now at the microphone, first district Republican. I mean, this guy shouldn't even be allowed to speak on a public microphone.
No, he's a bad guy.
He should be in court talking about his relationship with a tax collector who has pled guilty to numerous crimes. I mean, this
I think he's doing jail time now, isn't he? That tax collector guy. Yeah,
he's in jail. This guy isn't in jail. This is, and then we got Santos.
Yeah, I think that was basically his pimp is now in jail, the tax guy. Yeah,
it's who knows? I mean, and the gridlock is so deep that, you know, I'll be up front. Tracy Mann, Jake LaTurner, Ron Estes, those are the names of the representatives from Kansas who are goddamn traitors. I mean, on the night of January 6th, they were standing there and they just said, who are, you know, half these people, the 114 Republicans voted, against smoking old Joe. You know, they didn't want him to be president.
Right.
They went along with this. The elections are all fraud by courts and counts and recounts and counts and recounts. These people, what are they even in? Why are they even allowed in the chamber? I'm still trying to figure that out. They're technically.
You mean the relatives or what?
Traitors. The relatives, even the representatives.
Oh, the traitor. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you know, because laws don't count so much anymore. Well, one thing, here's a story that'll make you do pause. This is in today's times. Headline is, his six guns scared shoppers, but did he break any laws? 2 days after a gunman killed 10 people in a Colorado grocery store, in Atlanta, this guy is found in a bathroom, and he's got, like, seven weapons. He's got armor on, and he's got his weapons against the bathroom wall, and somebody goes in, and they report it, and, you know, he's eventually arrested. You know, he's 1, 2, 3, 4, he's got six guns and, you know, all kinds of crap and armor. And now his lawyer is saying, well, he wasn't breaking the law. He wasn't breaking the law. What the fuck is he doing with six guns and all these ammo and a vest in a bathroom in a shopping center? He's an American. He's just going about his business.
Well,
apparently, they're accepting that argument.
What state is that?
What? This is Atlanta, Georgia.
Georgia. Mm-hmm. They unfortunately have not only open carry, I think they even have concealed carry. I know Texas has concealed carry with no training or licenses.
Right, exactly. That's the law. I agree with you.
I guess
to me, what this registers in my mind, but of course I am a liberal person who reads the New York Times regularly. What this tells me is that the absurdity factor is so high and going up so high that, you know, that someone like this can argue, get some goddamn lawyer. You know, he's mentally ill, apparently. And, well, gee, don't be so hard on the guy. He's an American. He has a right to carry, you know. And so he's got six guns and armor plating and all in the bathroom at a grocery store. Well, you know, don't ask, it's his right. Don't ask any questions. Why is he doing this? He has the right to do it. Wait a minute here. You know, that's a dysfunctional society. You know, if a society begins to think like that, it's just guaranteeing going down the shithole, you know. It's like, no, you can't. And so what I'm saying is the absurdity factor is going up in all these cases. I think if you sort of look at it elliptically and you don't do the, you know, get obsessed on all the gotcha little outrages, that something is happening, you know, that the outrages of this right-wing lunacy are beginning to seem quite absurd to people. And so at that point, I think you begin to see shifts. And one thing that interests me is I always keep an eye on the Western Hemisphere and where it's going politically. And, you know, the left is now on an upsurge and throughout Latin America, from the Tierra del Fuego up to Mexico. Now, granted, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, drug war killing in Mexico. It's a charnel house. But, you know, they do have the Day of the Dead. They celebrate the dead, you know. And so you know, the right is really kind of against the wall. They're holding out pretty well in their ascendancy from the mid-70s, but it's a, I think, rather brittle movement at this point, but we'll see.
And Bolsonaro, Brazil, is now in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. Lula inaugurated, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. They put the son of a bitch in jail, and now he's president again. And Jair Bolsonaro, you know, this right-wing jerk, he was in Florida. He was at Disney World in Orlando. The coward, he fled. You know, it's pathetic.
Well, there's a lot of,
but the backlash is still there, and they're well armed. So, you know, the civil war is still potential. You know, but you know, these are interesting times. You know, it's a curse and a blessing.
You know,
they live in interesting times. You know,
they're rushing into the second count now, and I note that there are quite a few vacant seats. And, I mean, there's more than there were. And some of the children, I guess, have left the chamber. So, but there's still children there. Mm-hmm. So, I just look at this as like some sort of a circus house that's going on right now.
Yeah, right.
And very satisfied people on both sides of the aisle. And, mm-hmm. And now that they're, you know, it's on, I'm looking at my YouTube feed. There's one, two, three, four live feeds, four live feeds. One for PBS, ABC, Associated Press, and I'm watching C-SPAN. That's four live feeds that are running right now on this. It's almost like we're, it's like some very important people, news editors, in many different newsrooms are telling us, this is high drama.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a sad commentary on our society. I mean, I hear in the background, I'm hearing you talking about these people coming out. That's an old story, too. All the crazy, reactionary, murderous death squad sponsors in Central and Latin America end up in Florida.
Yeah.
Why do we even
it's my argument that Florida, you know, if you look at it as this giant penis hanging down into the Gulf of Mexico there,
right
off the front of the United States, you know, it's like the capital in a way of right wing Latin America. You know, and of course, as South America and some Central America go towards the left, you know, they become in a sort of a political dialogue with the United States, which, as I'm suggesting, is with the midterms, it wasn't a tsunami or anything like that, that the Republicans are, and, you know, Kevin McCarthy's trials and tribulations right now and his power struggle, that these people, it's not going well for them, you know, the right wing here. You know, they may skimp through owning by two votes or something the House of Representatives, but it's a very, very shaky leadership. And if they only pursue absurd, petty, partisan things, it's going to, you know, it's going to apply to their sense of uselessness and absurdity. And then they're going to, I think, the Republicans are going to be forced to push George Santos out. Because, as I said, the Democrats are delighted with George Santos. Yeah, goddamn, it doesn't make any difference whether he resigns. They still have, the Republicans still own the House by a couple seats. So they don't care. He's not doing any damage to the Democrats. In fact, he's providing this wonderful fodder that they can flog for 2 years. So it's the incentive is on the part of the Republicans to get rid of this son of a bitch, you know, and get him out of here. Somebody, please deliver me from this clown, you know.
The madness is, isn't McCarthy from Texas? Isn't that, I can't remember. Is that where he represents Texas, McCarthy?
Mm-hmm. Did he what?
He does. Does Kevin McCarthy come from Texas? Is Kevin McCarthy
No, he comes from
Texas?
California. He's California.
Oh.
He's a Republican from California. I don't know what part exactly, but, yeah. He's West Coast. Yeah.
West Coast. Okay.
Oh, and here's some news. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to point out that article you're reading about. The article you were reading about the gun guy. You know, they had an example in that same New York Times article about a different kind of example when I guess some guy in Texas did this with guns or something, and in that same article you were reading, I read it myself, noting how crazy Texas was. And, you know, of course, that's interesting. McCarthy's from California because they don't have any gun laws like that in California. Believe me.
He's of the right wing in California, which is a minority, of course, unlike Texas. And, there's a story here that's it's at the bottom of the front page, but biopic of divisive Croatian leader finds its star, Kevin Spacey. Huh? Kevin Spacey is going to play in a movie by a guy, I guess a director in Croatian director he knows. It's a hagiographic movie about the former leader of Croatia, Franjo Tudjman.
Never heard of him.
And again, this is a hagiographic, the first sentence, a hagiographic movie. In other words, this is a blowjob for the guy and who was a tyrant. He was a tyrant, you know. And Kevin Spacey is hard up for work, and now he's going to play, you know, Franjo Tudjman, which, you know, the Times thought was wacky enough to put on the front page. You know, a dishonored actor who's now, low-crawling around until he finds a role playing a tyrant in Eastern Europe, you know. It's like, that's pretty bad, you know.
What was his famous character, Underhall or under something in House of Cards? Our deck of cards or whatever.
My favorite Kevin Spacey role is American Beauty. American Beauty. It's a great satire.
Yeah, but in House of Cards, did you know they made a deal? Spacey said if he paid a Democrat, he could play that, Frank Underhall. Did you hear me?
You want
to, well, I mean, that's sort of a swipe there at the Democrats, what you said.
So Frank his Underwood. Character was a Democrat? I'm trying to get that straight. His character was – I never watched it that much,
In the series. Well, maybe that's why.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't aware of that. I didn't realize that. We were talking about Kevin Spacey, right? we were talking about Kevin Spacey.
Of course.
So I'm just sort of like, I mean, the twisted way that the things come out, I mean, it's just like today. I mean, here, what we're mm-hmm. watching right now, I mean, it's just, I mean, they, right. it's very twisted. It's very difficult for Joe and Jill Blow, the guys and gals that are out here working. They don't have time to watch this, you know. And all they want to know is, man, when can I make $15 an hour, or even just a few dollars more, or get some health insurance? I mean, it's and then you go to the left.
I agree. Yeah.
The so-called yeah. left, and it's so busy fighting itself.
True. That's why, you know, I'm against identity politics. We thought, you know, let's get rid of all this identity politics, which, you know, puts us against each other all the time,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely nuts, you know. I mean, this is what alienated me from Veterans for Peace when all the, you know, the women started attacking the old white guys. You know, I'm going, wait a fucking minute here. You know, I was accused of being a white colonialist by a black feminist woman who was a vet.
Sure.
And I said, wait a minute. I mean, I was arguing with my father about colonialism 50 years ago, you know, long before you were born, you know. And now all of a sudden I'm a white colonialist.
Let her run the goddamn outfit. Let her run the goddamn outfit. Let's see.
Well, no, I mean, it was an insignificant little thing, but it's the absurdity factor. It was the absurdity factor. I'm going like, what?
Yes,
is
yes
wrong
I agree with
this
you on
picture?
That. I agree with you on that. But I mean,
we fighting? I agree with you, my dear. You know, I agree 100% with you. You know, leave me alone.
Yeah, my attitude is like, you know, go ahead, run the damn thing. You know, collect the dues. I don't give a shit.
Right.
You know.
Well, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they're running. Yeah. I'm not really part of Vets for Peace anymore. Yeah.
You might point out, we need to point out to the audience that something, probably more eyes have been on it than what is on this today, this ceremony, the symbolic bullshit
mm-hmm.
that we're watching today, comes out of your
mm-hmm.
state. I have to.
My state.
And it is a mass murderer, accused, suspected,
uh-huh.
alleged mass murderer of and the knifing deaths of four students in Idaho State University in
it's all Pennsylvania's fault, right? Yeah, exactly. I think he went to a criminology school here or something, right?
Oh, I know all about it. I'm just saying I've been following it as well as hundreds of thousands of people around the country. This is one of the.
Right.
This is on
right.
the scale of O.J. Simpson and Nicole.
Sure. Right. Well, it's a great
really
story. It's an absolute great story. And there was I was looking at his picture last night. Now,
mm-hmm.
He looks like Jake Gyllenhaal, an actor I like, who's in a lot of, you know, small but good movies. And I can see the Jake Gyllenhaal movie right now. I mean, I can envision a 2-hour movie right now on this guy. It's, you know, what I know of it. My God, it's an incredible story. You know, I mean, here's a guy who's studying criminology and he wants to go around and talk to killers and people, you know, murderers in jail because he wants to talk about how they felt when they killed somebody. And
right.
Wow. That's quite a theme you're pursuing there, young man. You know,
he allegedly kills these four students.
Yeah,
all white, by the way, and they're all some of the biggest social humbugs, I would call them, in the campus.
Mm-hmm.
They live immediately off campus in a house, a very nice house. It's isolated. It's not, but. It's where all the 18-year-olds can go drink booze because
right.
You know,
it was a college
town,
I think. Right? Yeah.
It's a party
yeah.
house. Party. They had the most
right,
popular
right,
party
right,
house on the at the off the university, and they're all mm-hmm. all in sororities and Greeks, and it's right in the heart of the fraternity sorority areas off the campus. And this guy somehow gets
right.
in there at nighttime. and chops the shit out of all these kids. And
yeah, well, he did it so quietly, he didn't wake other people up. There were people in the building, in the apartment or whatever, didn't wake up. Yeah.
And then goes to, and
fortunately
somehow
for
makes
them,
it out of there, goes to class afterwards, acting like nothing happened, and then has his daddy come, the car, nationwide alert search on the car, and the car is sitting in there, and has his daddy in him. His daddy comes all the way, flies out there, and drives him back. The car's in his mommy's name. He has no criminal record whatsoever.
Wow.
And he and his daddy drive back in the nationwide hunt for this car. He gets stopped two times in Indiana. He gets stopped by the police. Two times in Indiana.
Well, the story I heard last night on TV was...
Now, where is this place in the Poconos where... And, well, help us out.
I don't know the name of the town, but I guess it's...
Kansas, it's in the Poconos. Where the... I mean, don't know?
The mountains, yeah.
You don't know?
I said mountains, the Pocono Mountains, yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't get you.
No, the Poconos are in the easterns. Okay, whatever.
It's not in Alabama between Pittsburgh and...
Well, it's on the eastern side, you know, and there's a resort area, a lot of resorts in the Poconos. And they go way back in the 50s, of course. You know, the Poconos are a resort getaway area, and people live there, and, you know, it's a mountain, sort of eastern, you know, they're these rolling eastern mountains, you know, older mountains than the western mountains.
Right. He went to a place called DeSalle University or college.
Yeah, that's outside Philadelphia, LaSalle, of course, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
He's one of us.
S-A-L-E-S. D-E-S-A-L-E-S.
Yeah, LaSalle. LaSalle's up in Germantown.
Okay.
It's where I used to live in the part of Germantown, Philadelphia.
That's where LaSalle is. Okay.
I lived not far from LaSalle when I was in Germantown.
So this guy, that university, he was a good, you know, star pupil. You know, got his master's degree there. At DeSalle University, Catholic private college.
Right, it's a Catholic school, right? Yeah.
And he lives, and his parents live in a gated community on a resort, as you pointed out, in the Poconos. And the car was in his mommy's name. I mean, this guy is very smart in terms of how did he get away with it? Well,
that's what makes him a very interesting story, as I say, you know. Somebody's going to make a move on this. There's no question. There's no question in my mind. Yeah.
Pennsylvania, dude.
Well, I just, speaking of Kansas, I just found a very good friend of mine. I didn't realize she's in her 80s. She's a writer, Kitsy Watterson. And she was raised in Kansas by a drunk. Her father was a terrible, violent drunk. You know, not that Kansas is responsible for that, but
well, it helps.
But
it helps a lot. Yeah. It helps along. I mean, I drank more booze on this holiday period than I have in a long time, man. Believe me.
Right.
This is a long holiday. I told my sweetheart if she was taking off. I said, "Boy, I'm glad the holidays are over. I don't think my liver could stand it much longer." She laughed and she thought it was. But here's another thing.
Your liver.
The daughter of the BTK killer, who is another killer.
Right, okay, that's a famous one in California, I think. He's a Kansas. All right.
He's a Kansas. I'm trying to relate to you. I'm trying to relate to you as a Pennsylvanian who has one of the most notorious mass murderers right now in the news.
I know.
We have him out here. we have them out here too. You know what I mean? So you're not the, I mean, it's bad, but
okay.
It's not bad.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys have nothing over us here, you know, or we have nothing over you. You know,
yeah.
We all produce serial killers.
Mass murderers and.
Well, you know, my theory of American culture is everybody loves a good killer. You know, it just,
yeah.
You know, it's one of these dirty little secrets of, you know, people say, oh, God, you know, I mean, you just, somebody's ability to kill people, it's just fascinating, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a little twisted, but, you know, this look at the dramas burn out constantly in order to, you know, God, you go to Netflix, the horrors of the piled up horrors of movies, it's incredible, you know, it's like, my God.
Well, and let's step back
and it's like, I can see the producers and the writers in Hollywood going, oh, wow, now here's another one. Can you look at the story? They're going to be fighting over each other to make this script, you know.
So when you're African American female leader of Iraq veterans or the veterans against the war group, you know, start saying, tell her, go ahead. You know, while we're at it, why don't we address it? 50% of the homicides in this country are never solved.
Right, of
and
course, right,
are,
of course.
And most of them are, and wait a minute.
You know, this is what my cranky old dad used to say. Okay, go ahead.
And wait, and most of them are of women. Women that have been killed.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
And a lot of them are African American and Native American. She's upset about you being an old geezer in an anti-war group, okay?
Yeah.
And, but... I mean, I guess what I'm saying is the problems are much bigger than squabbling over our genitals and skin color. The problems are much bigger than genitals and skin color.
I wasn't expecting you to say it quite that way, but yeah, I agree with you. You know, we shouldn't be worried about, you know, what's hanging down between our crotch. You know, it's like that we're not worried about.
Or who we want to fuck, or how we want to fuck, or any of that shit. I mean, this is nothing.
I tell you, you get right down to it there, don't you, Mike Cabell?
Yeah, get my name in there. We got the BTK. And by the way, the BTK killer in Kansas, he got away with it for over 20 years. He got away with it.
Oh, yeah.
20 years.
Incredible.
I mean,
it is incredible that, you know, you have people that, you know, they enjoy extinguishing other people's lives. And it's a horrific thing. I'll never forget the lawyer who had worked against the mob in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He was, and I was photographing him this Republican Institute in Philadelphia, the Union League, and he was talking about capturing these mobsters. You know, Philadelphia Mafia, big deal. Famous people, notorious. Anyway, he told, I'll never forget this, he said, we were wiretapping this guy, you know, and he had just killed somebody, and that he was talking to his pal, and he was just talking about it. He says, oh, yeah. You know, I got him, you got him down. I forgot exactly how he extinguished this poor man's life, but he did. And then he said to this guy on the phone, and he's saying, "Oh yeah, it was so good. I just wanted him to come back to life so I could kill him again." You know, and I'll never forget that this guy was wiretapped saying that. You know. That it was so enjoyable for him that he just wanted to bring him back to life so he could kill him again, you know. And you know, that's not funny, but it's absurd that people in life somehow get to that spot. And of course, Freud talked about Thanatos, the death instinct. You know that people basically had a ultimately self-destructive impulse in them. which is a little half-baked, but, you know, interesting. I don't know why we got on this morbid topic here, huh?
I guess because of what I'm seeing in Congress. No, in Congress. I did see, sending weapons to Ukraine, you know, mass murder here in our country. It's just, to me, it's sort of like, does anyone see this, or are they so busy trying to get a minimum wage raised that they can't even, or arguing, or I don't want old white men running an anti-war organization, or, all these crazy things that we fight on each other.
This is what I call the absurdity factor, you know, the absurdity factor. You know, I'm serious about this, that if you don't see life now in America in many ways as absurd, I don't think you're paying attention. You know what I mean? And I always loved the absurdists, you know. I mean, there's a whole genre of art and plays and whatnot about absurdity, you know. I mean, one of my favorites is Ionesco's Rhinoceroses, you know, where the poor guy's in his house and these thundering armored animals are thundering all around him, and there's more and more of them out there, you know, and he's beginning to grow a horn himself, you know, and, you know, one of the great absurdist plays.
In light of today's discussion with you, John Grant, I would like you to finish up answering this question.
Okay.
Have we got beyond bullshit zone? The bullshit, American bullshit.
Oh no! It's just becoming more baroque and more. Harry Frankfurt, the former head of the philosophy department at Harvard, who wrote the book on bullshit, which opens up with the first sentence, the most salient feature of American culture is there is so much bullshit, period, you know. And he's right, you know, marketing, all outside the box, who cares about the shit inside the box, you know. And we're being, you know, probably destroyed by it. But what more can you do? There's nothing you can do about it. It's like a plague. But anyway, on that note, bullshit is still with us.
It's still with us, and it's back. Where John Grant is back on Tuesday.
And it's as American as apple pie, you know.
Apple pie, bullshit. All right.
Bullshit is as American as apple pie. All right. Have a good week.
Y'all are great.